Education Committee for Friday, March 6th. Jumping ahead of myself. Hey, today we've got two public hearings that we'll be doing. But before we do, just kind of general announcements. There are some bills that we've been working on, hopefully coming up with solutions outside of the normal process. And Representative Reardon had a suggestion that we were going to follow.
Well, thank you, Chair. I just really got excited about this idea of trying to do something in a relative short term that will help with attendance at our schools. We've talked about that quite a bit. I'm convinced there are really good ways of addressing attendance issues. And so I'd like to invite and suggest that we start a work group that is very focused on getting something done to make a recommendation this session. Mm-hmm. When I heard task force the other day, I kind of got excited because I was thinking task force is something you go off and study it for 2 years and come back and I don't want to take that long. I just really would like to do something now, and so I'd like to invite people to do that.
Okay, and the idea was there are a lot of school districts that are doing great things to make sure kids stay in school, keep in school, go to school, and those are the districts we're going to call on to get information. So let's open up the committee. It's going to be kind of a formal, informal session to come up with ideas as to what we can do to deal with attendance and the attendance issues that we have. Okay? Okay, so with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3044. Would you like to please give us a summary?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3044 requires public charter schools to obtain written permission from district school boards if of another school district if the public charter school uses the real property in the other school district for school or for facility for another facility to provide instruction.
Okay. So with that, we have Kristen Miles, David Williams, and does Gary want to come up too, or is that?
Okay.
Sure, Gary. Temple from SIO.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. David Williams with Portland Public Schools. I'm mostly just going to turn it over to Kristen Miles, our Director of Charter Schools today, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions about the bill as you move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, thank you. Currently, charter schools...
If you could address yourself.
I'm sorry.
Recognize yourself for the record, please.
Portland Public Schools.
Thank you.
Currently, charter schools can locate offices or drop-in centers in districts other than their sponsoring districts. They do not have to seek permission from their sponsor nor from the other district to do this. In fact, a charter school is not required to even notify its sponsor or the other district if it locates an office or a student drop-in center in another district. Any center where students can come and receive instruction or tutoring could arguably be considered a school, and must not only be monitored by the sponsoring district, it must be located within the sponsoring district. Any exception to this should, at minimum, require permission from the district in which the charter school's drop-in center will be located. We will also be asking to add a provision to the bill that any charter school currently locating an office or drop-in center in a district other than its sponsoring district to notify its sponsor and the other district. Current law requires that any district wishing to locate in a building or locate a building in a school district other than its own must seek permission from the other district. This bill only seeks to align this practice for charter schools with an existing law for all districts.
Okay. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, can you guys hear that?
Yeah, okay. Actually, you can go back.
My name is Gary Temple. I'm the superintendent of the school district. We currently are the sponsor of two charter schools, Orca and Lourdes. The question before you today...
No, Gary, you can actually stand sit
oh,
back
good.
A little bit. Yeah.
So the question before you today is whether or not a district should have the opportunity to approve a office going into their district if they are not sponsoring the charter school. And I think the answer should be yes. Further, I think the sponsor of the charter school should have the opportunity to approve the office that is going into another district, because we will have the oversight responsibilities of the office. Currently, we have a situation where multiple online providers are considering offices in other districts. And when I, maybe five years ago now, we did an online task force. I was a member of that task force. One of the things we wanted to make sure of is that the office of the charter school was in the district. What we were concerned with was charter schools would get sponsored by a district and the office would never be there. Well, we never envisioned, or at least I never envisioned, that we would be talking about multiple offices, and we should have put an S instead of an E at the end of that sentence. ORCA is no exception to this rule. We learned in November that ORCA was going to put an office in Westland Wilsonville to open in spring, during spring break of this year, which is just a couple of weeks away. They're planning to do student intake, test students there, tutor students there, and do staff meetings and trainings. This was without our permission and without Westland and Wilsonville's permission. If the committee decides to work this bill, I would ask you to add a provision in it that they have to have permission from the sponsoring district as well as the district that they're going to put the office in. It does kind of raise some concerns. So how is it that the sponsoring district is to provide oversight in an office that's over an hour away? What if they had established that office in Ontario or Klamath Falls? What's the district's responsibility liability if something happens to a student in that building? And despite what we might believe the legal decision would be, I don't know that that would be the case as it's printed in the paper above the fold. And then what rights do other districts have to keep charter school buildings out of their district that they are not sponsoring, that are being, that have public dollars coming to them? And I understand the educational value of having offices in other cities. I get that. But in the overall picture, I think the sponsors and the districts in which these offices are going need to be able to have some say. With that, I will open it up to questions.
Okay. Are there any questions of the panel? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if the sponsoring school is in charge of the charter, why would it matter where they are? Because ultimately the response lies with the charter. So can you just help me understand why it would matter if ultimate? I mean, if they land in another district, it's not your responsibility, correct, to worry about that? So I guess I'm having a hard time understanding why you would care, because, I mean, heck, if we're educating more children, great. And if they're being monitored by the school that's they're chartered under, what does it matter? I guess I'm trying to understand why that matters. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Chair Doty, Representative Hack, I think for us there really is a threshold question around the validity and value of school district boundaries with taxpayers that pay a tax base and contribute and have a reasonable assurance about the business of public education operating inside the boundaries of that district. So currently, and the bill is actually fairly simple because it simply extends current statute. So current statute, if you as a school district, if I, Portland Public Schools, wanted to open up a facility in, say, Beaverton and educate some kids over there, I go to Beaverton, I try to get permission from them, I say, here's what I'm doing, we come to some agreement, they do that. We actually have a building located in our boundaries that is not a Portland Public Schools building that has permission from us to operate, Riverdale High School. So it's the same extension of that. So this charter schools, by definition and statute, are component schools of school districts that sponsor them. Those component schools ought to operate in the boundaries of that school district. If they want to operate in somebody else's boundaries, we're not saying you can't do it. We're saying you should go to that district and get permission to operate with that inside that boundary.
Kind of a follow-up. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, though, then they're pulling students go from all different districts across our state to these charters, okay? And those districts benefit from those dollars. So if there's a student that goes from your district to that school, you're benefiting from those dollars, but you're saying that they shouldn't have an opportunity to therefore put a site in your district? That's contradictory. You're benefiting from it, and they can benefit from students participating in these from across our state, and more students are being educated, which is a great thing. So if you're benefiting from the dollars because your students are able to enroll in these schools, why would it not be okay for them to locate there? I guess I don't understand that.
So Representative Doherty, Representative Hack, good question. So we have the only benefit that we under current law receive is a half of the district retained portion. So if a student attends a charter high school in another district, the charter high school gets 95%, and then the district retains 5%. They send me 2.5% of that 5%. We're getting to pretty diminishing returns. We also have another piece of legislation that hopefully you'll consider this session to eliminate that return, because it's frankly an administrative burden to have that money flowing back and forth across the state. So there would be no, I would receive no benefit. My theory is there's no benefit to the school district. That child has chosen to attend school in another school district. And that's the decision that child has made under current statute. We think we have a wealth of offerings to offer that kid in our district, and we'd be more than happy to have them in. But if they want to choose to attend that school, there's really no benefit to me as a school district, certainly, especially if other statutory change happens this session.
One last follow-up. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And thank you for indulging. I really appreciate it. And thank you for being here. So, again, though, if we are allowing children the opportunity to have the options of attending school, which I agree, you're giving them an opportunity for an education, but if they choose to not do that and it doesn't fit them, why would we not provide the opportunity and let them locate there? And I guess I still am just not. I don't think I don't feel like my question's being answered as to why this is a big deal.
So let me try to give some thought to that. Representative Doherty, Representative Hack, members of the committee. So a couple of things. So first, the basic premise of a charter school is that it is to serve the needs of the district. And kind of what you're describing is a charter school that serves the needs of the state. And so that's certainly a question that will be asked today, is whether or not a charter school that needs to be in multiple places in the state should be served or sponsored by the state and not by a local district. But in the other part of that is, if a charter school wants to be, there are several charter schools that have multiple charter schools, and so they seek multiple sponsorships. So if they want to be in Portland, they seek a sponsorship from Portland, they seek a sponsorship from Malala, right? I don't think we want to set up a situation where a charter school can seek sponsorship in maybe the most remote place they possibly can, with the idea that they would just put an office where they want it.
Can I? Thank you, Madam Chair. So I understand that it would be not a bad idea for whoever the sponsoring school would be to notify them where they're going to locate a new office or whatever, because that's who's governing them, that's who's watching over them. But I still don't understand why you would feel the need to have the approval of the other when we're servicing kids from wherever.
So the only, Representative Doherty and Representative Hack, the only thing I would say there is, if Portland Public School was to come put a building in my district, I would take exception to that.
Apples and oranges, can't compare.
I understand what you're thinking. From a district standpoint, we see them all at schools.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, thank you. Excellent questions. And I just think for us, it's about who has oversight of the operation of public schools inside the boundaries and servicing the kids in my district. If a kid wants to go to another district outside my boundaries, that is certainly their prerogative under certain statutes. We think if you're going to operate inside my boundaries, I have a locally elected board who are elected for that purpose to provide that oversight, and you ought to run through them.
Okay. Did that answer your question? Because the way I see it in kind of my simplistic way is that if a charter school in Beaverton wants to have a drop-in center in Portland, they don't have to tell you. But if something happens in that building in your school district boundaries, possibly somebody from the Beaverton charter could maybe call you to task or sue you or something because it was actually within the boundaries of Portland. Is that maybe a concern a little bit?
That
Chair Doherty, no. I mean,
this is kind of a complicated.
You know, obviously, when you get into the nature of litigation and those sorts of things, there's a lot of variables that come into play there. I mean, for us, really, it is more about the sanctity of the boundaries of the district. And if you're going to operate public education inside the boundaries of our school district, we have seven members of an elected board that stand for election and get voted on by the voters of Portland to operate public education in the inside the boundaries of the district. And we think they're the appropriate.
My comment would be that the one that's responsible is the school district that's overseeing the charter, not where they decide to locate. And that's my understanding anyway.
Okay, and what Mr. Williams seems to be saying is that it's just his board needs to know if there's another public school that's in
which,
their boundaries.
Which, to me, that could be up to the sponsoring district to then notify them that, hey, we have a charter school, not asking for permission, but just saying, hey, we could. Yeah, there's other ways I think you could do this.
Representative Springer, then Representative Barreto.
Can I get on the list? Oh, this morning on the list.
Can
I get on the
McLean.
List too? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
So where'd this issue come from? What brought this up? Because we've been talking a lot of theory and what could be. We're all busy, so bills usually don't just hatch. There's conversation that precedes the idea.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, Representative Springer. We're always looking for good public policy, so we hatch ideas often. I think this certainly came out of
I did not do that on purpose.
Are operators in the state who were looking at our district specifically, because we're a dense population center, to open what we view as schools to operate inside the boundaries of Portland Public Schools, and we as a district felt that that was not an appropriate tactic.
Follow-up?
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not a follow-up. It's another question. If the concern is knowing what's going on and being able to, I guess, discern what building is operated by which particular district, I think maybe one of the words in here that could be concerning people is the word approve. Mm-hmm. What if the word was notify?
Yes.
Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, I think certainly that would be a waypoint to get to where we want to go. Our ideal is the bill as presented, but that would certainly be at least a step in that direction for us. I can't say that that's where we necessarily want to go, but you know, it certainly is moving that direction.
You need a follow-up?
Last follow-up, I think. So, I gotta say, that makes me think then it's not just about knowing what's going on, it's having some control and decision-making authority over what's going on. And what would be, this doesn't say, and I don't know if this would come through rulemaking, but what is the thinking about, what is that approval based on? Is it whatever the board deems appropriate at the time, or are there some criteria, like you have to have liability insurance and things like that?
Right. Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, we didn't spell that out in the bill. Obviously, we believe the local board is the appropriate authority for determining what they view as the best operation of a physical plant inside their boundaries, and that's where we would leave it. I don't think we would be averse to the conversation of creating some criteria in the legislation for the board to consider and use as part of its evaluation. I think that's classically one of those the devil would be in the details on what that looks like.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Representative McLean, then Representative Brittle, then Representative Reardon.
Okay, so I just want to step back a little bit and just say what my impression was when I first looked at this piece of legislation from the point of communication. First of all, communication number one, serving students to the best of our ability, number two, because you have to have all of that. And on the communication level, whether you're a sponsoring, you know, school district, or whether you're a hosting school district, or whether you have some role, it seems to me that the most important thing is for everybody to know everything. And so whether it's notified or whether it was approved or anything else, if there's a basis here for having better policy for school districts and for kids, is if everybody knows what is happening from the get-go. So that's the premise I'm coming to this conversation. So now to the issue. Schools have to plan a long time ahead. They have to look at the future. They have to create, you know, what they need in the way of buildings and facilities and services for students within their district. So this is a question for anybody. But the point is doesn't this approval process allow you to know if you have somebody else as part of the puzzle or part of the unit or part of the machine that's going to help with all of the students in that district area?
I guess I'll take a shot. So, Chair Doherty, Representative McClain, I think you've described it exactly correct, is that this is a big puzzle, and we as districts need to know, I believe, what's going on in our district. One of the things that was not mentioned was, if there's an office in Portland Public School District and there's a problem, where does that parent think that charter school is sponsored by? Where are they going to go complain to? And I'm guessing they're going to go down to downtown Portland. They're not going to come to downtown Scio.
Rose Quarter.
So
the follow-up on that, I guess, is what's the harm? I can't see what the harm is for good communication. So I'm not asking that as a question. I'm just saying that I think whatever we do as a committee, that we need to figure out, number one, where's the best communication, and how do we make sure that everybody can plan appropriately for the kids that they are personally responsible for. And they can give approval for those kids to have other experiences. But if the other experience just happens in your lap, how are you supposed to know about it or plan for it or experience with the rest of the community what it means to the rest of the school district or the school programs? I don't get it.
Okay. So what's... Thank you. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. I guess what I see here, whether it's written permission, whether it's approval, whether it's notification, there seems to be tension here on this panel about it. And I would hate to see that be the catalyst for making a decision rather than what's best for the kids. So.
Okay. Okay, Representative Britton.
Thank you. Kind of interesting. So two questions, if I may, just real quick. Who's legally responsible for the students if they're, let's say they're from their Portland residence attending a school, which is charter school, who's responsible? Is that PPS or is that this other school?
Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, the students are, it gets a little complicated. I think it's probably simple to say that the responsibility of the charter school and the sponsoring school district of that charter school. However, the students always have a right to attend public school in the district in which they are resident.
Right. I'm just thinking if an accident occurred or something, who would that reflect upon? So follow up, please.
Follow up.
And then just also when they're, the results of the assessments are reported to the world, who gets credit for the results?
Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, the charter school assessment results, because the school is a component of the sponsoring district, they are they are that sponsoring school district.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Reardon?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Doherty. What are the options if that district does not grant permission?
Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, under this proposed statute, I think the option is they find another place.
It's outside of the district.
Correct. I think it goes to Representative Springer's question around criteria, if there were some criteria in the bill. If they felt there were due process problems, obviously they could sue the district for that. Our vision, and I know maybe some people don't necessarily believe it, but our vision is that if somebody was operating a significant presence in my district or had a significant group of kids, that they would come to us and make the case that they need some physical presence to help those kids. I think we're clearly talking mostly around virtual charter school education, not traditional sure. bricks and mortar. However, that's more place-based, but we do see some examples of that currently happening around the state, but you know that's a little bit different book, although this affects both equally. For us, around that virtual education, you'll hear from me later on another bill. For instance, I have almost 400 students attending the largest virtual charter schools in the state. If those schools wanted to operate in our district boundaries and felt it important, we would hope that they would come to us and make the case about being a valid partner with Portland Public Schools. I can't say that we would or wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't speak for my board on that. We have a very interesting board sometimes, and they have really great discussions about these things. But I would want them to be able to have that discussion around what's the appropriate way to service service those kids in the boundaries of our school district. If kids want to attend that virtual charter school online and go, you know, to some other facility where they've got it or not, that certainly is their prerogative under statute. But if they're going to operate a physical presence inside our boundaries, we would want them to have that discussion about how it fits with our overall program as well.
If I could, I would weigh in here, Chair Doherty, Representative Barreto. What I would hope, back to Representative Springer's comments, would be that there would be some criteria. And David would say to me, what plan do you have for oversight? Right? We want to make sure that these kids are safe if they're going to be in our district, along with some of the criteria that Representative Springer was talking about. I mean, that kind of makes sense, kind of goes back to you. And sort of puts all this back together and back to your communication piece. So,
okay, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're talking a lot about physical presence, and maybe I'm wrong here, but don't most online charter school students study from home? Is the first part of that question. I know that there are occasional, fairly rare is my understanding, of get-togethers, if you will, as a student body, and oftentimes that's by way of a field trip or something wherever, not necessarily within the confines of the district. So I'm wondering if we're talking about office space here, and I'm just still struggling to see what the issue is, unless it is there could be a presence here and draw more students.
Mm-hmm. So, Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, the bill is specifically talking about facilities that where students will gather for instruction. So we're not talking about a server farm, we're not talking about a call center or any of that such thing. What we're talking about is a spot where students would congregate, which looks to us a lot like a school. And if you're going to operate a school in our district, we either ought to be the sponsor or at least give you permission to operate.
Is that how we have some onlines operating? They show up at a building every day for school, and it's called an online school?
So, Representative Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, you're going to see multiple models, and I think we have several sponsor or several charter schools in the room today. But there are what we would call hybrids, where students come part-time online and part-time into the building. There are more full-time online from home. But in this case, we know that the goal for at least ORCA is to be able to serve some students at some point in the building. That's, you know, they want to bring kids in for tutoring, testing, and intake. But you're going to see there are multiple models out there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Frederick.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me that this comes down to a question of responsibility, who is in fact responsible. It also seems to me that you're talking about the fact that we are talking about public schools, and that public schools have the responsibility is a board, an elected board, and how we connect that elected board with charter schools that may have a nonprofit status but are connected with a for-profit entity, that we really have a balance. That's a real struggle here. The idea of the hybrid program is something that I think we need to be very much aware of. Frankly, I think it's a better model than a full online for if we're going to be effective in terms of education. But this is a question of responsibility for me, and I'm not sure whether we've found that balance yet, either within this or within other situations.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for the panel?
Can I ask one more?
Representative Barreto.
Madam Chair. Got this letter from Daniel Hull from the Baker Charter School, and they worked with David Douglas to just put an agreement together. And it says the primary goal for that was just to administer tests and to have a meeting place with parents if needed. And they said, you know, their enrollment wasn't increased in the David Douglas School District. So is that typically the purpose for these, or you had talked about building a building and other things within a district, but if the primary purpose is just for meeting, administering tests and things like that.
Chair Doherty, Representative Barreto, a good question. I did see the letter in OLS. I think to Superintendent Temple's comment, I think there really is not a garden variety. I think there's a whole spectrum of ways that we're delivering education with an online overlay, and it looks like a lot of different things. Sometimes it looks more like a school setting. Sometimes it looks more like a kid at home learning at home. And so that's when it gets hard to pin that down. I actually think that letter is a really good example of where they did work together. They went to David Douglas School District and did talk to them about where they wanted to locate. And I think if this bill had been in place, David Douglas would have given them permission to operate, and I think that would have been a positive. So I think that's a proof positive where you can have a really good outcome, whether it's even simply offices or if it's testing. Our bill is really focused on where kids are getting instruction. It's not necessarily focused on office space. But I think that's a good example of where you can get a collaboration that can be a positive outcome for kids, for districts, for taxpayers, etc.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Quickly,
I don't want to make it long. I just want to say, you know, everything that I heard right here just gives me more pause with Representative Frederick, that there's a lot of stuff out there and a lot of things that school boards that have been elected have to be dealing with, and the more information, the more communication, the better. So it sounds like this is the good starting discussion, but that there's more work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Okay, the next two we have signed up is Dr. Hold and Candy Farthings. Thank you. You want to identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes. Good afternoon, committee members. I'm Dr. Daniel Hold, and currently I'm serving as the director of Baker Charter Schools. We have a Web Academy, which is a virtual charter school, as well as an early college. These options are available to students all over Oregon. I am the director of these schools, and I provide oversight for both schools. I report directly to Baker School District on a monthly basis, and so our communication is very strong with our sponsor district. And I wanted to offer our perspective. As mentioned in the letter, we did open a drop-in center in Portland, and I did my very best under all the current statutes to make sure that when I opened this drop-in center, I did everything I could to ensure that I was in compliance with all current laws. So as mentioned in the letter, we called David Douglas School District to make sure that they knew what we were doing. We also have seen actually a drop in enrollment. So I think that if that's a fear of the committee, it may not always be justified. And so we called David Douglas School District. We work with Baker School District. We actually worked with ODE as well to ensure that the operations of our drop-in center were in compliance with everything that I was aware of at the time. And so my concern with the current language is, as somebody who has invested a lot of time, myself putting together furniture and resources, public funds, I would want to walk away with some level of assurance that the good research and everything that I did to open up this center would not be wasted if indeed David Douglas decided that they didn't want to approve it. And so that would be my concern with the current language. As I said in my letter, our main goal was to be able to facilitate state testing. As we know, it's gotten a little bit more complicated this year. And last year, to accomplish state testing, we had 150 state testing sessions, and 30 of them were in the Portland metro area, which resulted in multiple library reservations and a lot of coordination, a lot of staff time. And my goal was to facilitate that in a much more effective, efficient manner. Also, we used the drop-in center to meet with parents and provide some cohesive professional development for our staff. So I made actually extra effort to make sure that we weren't doing quote-unquote instruction at the office, because it was my understanding that would qualify it as a school. So I even put administrative rules in place to make sure that students didn't come there for more than 2 days a week, which is what I worked out with the Department of Ed. And so I think I have a different story and a different perspective of a school that tried to do it right and wants to make sure that the staff and the resources I use to open this space, that my freedom to do so would remain intact. Further, we do have goals to open centers in other regions, and so I would want to make sure that we would be able to accomplish that. Based on my research of online learning, using the blended learning model, as Representative Frederick said, is a better way to meet student needs, and where and when we can do that, we would love the freedom to be able to open these centers to serve the students. And lastly, I would like to say that as far as the responsibility of these students, I have liability insurance. Baker School District remains oversight of our school. We have monthly meetings with the school district. I report to my board every month. As the local administrator in the Portland area, I am directly responsible for ensuring that all the policies, procedures that would apply for my main office in Baker are implemented in the same way at our Portland Drop-In Center. So Baker School District, Baker Charter Schools, maintains all the liability responsibility for those students. And that's my job as an administrator to make sure whether my students and teachers are in a home visit or a drop-in center, that safety, security, and everything is up to par. So I believe that that is all my prepared comments. I'm certainly open to questions, and I would also suggest if you do move forward with this, that consider participation from me in helping with language to make it meet the needs of students.
Okay, thank you. Why don't we hear from Ms. Farthings, and we'll open it up for questions. Thank you.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, thanks for having us here today. My name is Candy Farthing, and I'm the executive director at Oregon Connections Academy. This is my 13th year in education, and I actually started out in a private charter school and then was a reading specialist at a brick-and-mortar middle school before I became a teacher at Oregon Connections Academy. My heart and passion has always been the at-risk kids, and that's the reality of what we're working at Oregon Connections Academy. So I love the opportunity. I love that my job is being able to support those kids and doing whatever it takes to help them be successful. And a big part of us helping them be successful is by offering the face-to-face time around the state. I remember when I was teaching, there was a group of kids that I had that were struggling, and the disconnect between being online versus, you know, the teacher behind the screen, it was that face-to-face time that really made a difference, to be able to sit down with them and be able to start making progress from here to here, and to be able to start seeing that they can be successful and they can do this and they can be successful in this online program. So part of what we're concerned about with this is, you know, we've got the face-to-face meetings throughout the state all the time that's helping these kids be successful and making a difference for them. Does that mean that we need to get permission through the district every time we have these tutorings and face-to-face sessions? Because that's another loophole, you know, whether it's approval or whatever. What do we
notify.
Thank you. Thank you. And I apologize. This is my first time doing this, and I'm really nervous. So thank you for bearing with me.
You're doing fine.
And I'm trying not to talk fast. So whether it's approval or notification, that is one more hoop that we're trying to jump through when we really just want to support these kids. And that's one more thing that's stopping us to do what it takes to support these kids. I have 140 staff members all around the state. We're close to 4,000 students. And it's my job to help make sure that we're doing whatever we can to make those kids be successful. So we are concerned about this bill and what it means as another loophole for these kids. On the opposite side of the spectrum, I, for the last 7 years, have been trying to get a Science Olympiad competition going. And this spring, we're participating in the regional Science Olympiad competition. And to be able to do that with 20 students that are around the state, we need to have time for them to meet and practice and be prepared to actually compete together as a team. So this concerns me, that one more loophole that we might have to jump through to be able to support these kids. Also, what about if we chose to do outdoor education for a week? Would we have to get approval for that as well? So that's all I have. Thank you, and let me know if you have any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. You have any questions, Representative Frederick?
Yes, Madam Chair. I guess I'm having a problem because it seems as though we're trying to duplicate things. I'm not sure what your program is in Baker City. Mm-hmm. and why it is so different than what you might find in Portland or in Beaverton or in Oregon City or Sayo or whatever, and why we are trying to, it seems as though we're duplicating things. Is it so special? I'm sure you think that it is so special, but is it so unusual?
The leading question.
Is it so unusual that that we don't? There's no example of that. I mean, I love Baker. Okay, let me just make that Baker City. I happen to enjoy it. I'd love to get out there and see. Mm-hmm. I've been over there a number of times, but I'm just having a problem with the duplicative stuff. Why do you need a center? Why do you need something here in either in Portland or Salem or wherever to do this? I understand part of what ORCA's been doing because I've been watching ORCA develop over the last few years, but I haven't been paying as close attention to Baker City.
Okay, good.
That was a good line. I gotta say.
Oh my gosh. I haven't necessarily over the last couple of years been very engaged down here in Salem, and so I'm going to try to do that a little bit more because our story is unique. And as far as if we're duplicating or not, I really don't think that we are. I think that there's a lot of niches within education. And I feel that what we offer as a school is fairly unique. And I would say, looking at our demographics also, that a lot of students that choose to enroll in Baker Charter Schools, whether they're in Eugene, Coos Bay, Portland, or Grants Pass, they made that choice, and a lot of them would not enroll in a traditional school. So we represent about 80% of our students have been in a public school and have tried it for whatever reason, and it's not working for them. And so what we offer is a little bit of a different educational model, and we've been doing it for 7 years, and we are statewide. And at this point, we've gotten pretty good at what we do. We offer the parents choices and flexibility. We have highly qualified teachers. We do home visits, which is rare. And I invest significant resources, both in teacher time and mileage, to make sure that those home visits are happening. So we do have something that I feel is rare and unique, and I don't see that model necessarily all over the state. So that's why we have been growing so quickly, is because we are offering something that is different. And even if not given that choice, the parents that we serve may not enroll in a brick-and-mortar school.
Okay.
Follow up. Yeah.
I'm afraid I didn't feel as though you answered my question.
Okay.
Every school is going to say that they connect with the parents and with the teachers, that they are providing resources. If Portland decided that it wanted to create a school and go into Baker or into someplace else and started pulling students out because they had a special program, there are folks who would get upset about that. I saw Portland do that, and I know that takes place. So you haven't told me how the curriculum is different, what you're changing that helps the kids in an educational experience. I mean all of those things that you said are appropriate for any school. Determining the individual needs of kids and addressing them. I guess I probably need to go offline on this because we could talk a long time on this. But
yeah.
My point on this is that it seems to me that we are in some cases duplicating what we already have around the state. And frankly, with the amount of money we have available for schools, we really can't afford that kind of duplication.
Right. I think I also forgot to answer your question of why I need a drop-in center. I think you asked that in your first line of questioning. So as far as why I needed the drop-in center, as I mentioned, the main reason was to facilitate testing. It's incredibly complicated. I wanted to reduce that, increase efficiency. I also wanted to provide a place where I could meet with my staff members, because prior to this, we were meeting in each other's homes or renting spaces at the libraries. And so it increases my ability to connect with the staff and support them as the regional administrator. You asked what the difference is in the curriculum. I would say that we have a pretty rigorous curriculum selection process. And I've actually spoke to the people in Portland who are trying to start an online school. And I think that we've made some different choices with online curriculum. And since we've been doing this for about 7 years, some of the choices we've made have resulted in really what I feel are high-quality online curriculum programs that we're offering to our students. We're giving all the students a Chromebook or a computer, the home visits. And that's not a model, again, that I see being offered in Portland Public. And I feel, based on my experience, my research, working with the students, that some of the programs we offer are very strong programs.
That's fine. By the way, talking about testing, it won't. I have a particular view regarding that, so we won't go into that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I appreciate your comments, and I will take a look and see what the curriculum is. I am concerned about duplication on this, and I'm also concerned about the ability for local boards to have access and understand what they're doing. There is a business model that attempts to try to get around local board representation. I've seen it take place. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bad idea. So this is a concern of mine. Thank you.
Hey, Representative Springer and then Representative Bretta.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Candace, a question for you. I'm on ORCA's website now and been going through several things, and I'm not able to find meeting minutes. How do I find those on here? I've gone to the agenda and clicked on that, looked for, you know, maybe minutes to be attached there, you know, when boards vote to approve them from the prior meetings. Where do I find those? I also went to archives. I'm not doing
that
so
is,
well.
That is a good question, and I'm not sure of the answer. I think you can ask for them.
Okay.
Thank you.
And you'll get back to Representative Springer?
Yes, I'll get back to you.
Yeah, that'd be good on the easiest way to access them, and if indeed you do have them online or not online.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this will help Representative Frederick, too, but it'll help me also. Most of these kids that you have in the school, you said 80% of them have been in public education. And so are these at-risk kids? And then also my understanding was that in the districts, a virtual charter school can only have a certain percentage of mm-hmm. kids from that district?
Yeah. That's true. I mean, I know for us, you know, more than 60% of our students are academically behind and at risk. And I actually, you know, we use the word credit deficient, but credit deficient is actually K-12. And I think what we really try to do as a school is focus on that at the K-8 level to really get them on track, to help them be supported as they get to high school. And yes, there is a 3%. There's only 3% in the local district that can go to an online school.
Could I address that question as well?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the question is, with some of our students as well, we have a number of students who are grade level below or two grade levels below. And so what we've really tried to do this year is really focus on personalizing the curriculum to meet that student's needs. And so we're able to really level the program. And if a student is in eighth grade and they're showing us on diagnostic tests that they're operating at sixth grade, I can easily switch an online class down to sixth grade and allow them to work at their grade level, offer them interventions, and help them improve as a student. And so I'm really passionate about working with the students, and we also represent a number of students. About 40% of our students struggle or are behind in their coursework. And so that is a priority for us. We're also very aware of the school districts where there is a 3% cap already on virtual school enrollment. And so we're aware of that, and we comply with all the procedures to make sure that districts know how many students are in Baker Charter Schools every single month. And
I'm going to have you summarize. Right. We're like over halfway, okay. Which means it'll cut back time of the other.
All right.
Which already is because we have some business to do. So if we could summarize.
Okay. I'm done.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Good summary.
Very quick.
I promise. Real quick. I just want to comment is I feel like we're a little taking too long, maybe because we're trying to, it sounds like some of the conversation determine, you know, these are good programs for kids or not. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I would say that part of our challenge here is there's some former school board members and other people that are on this panel. It makes it hard because we really feel ownership for all the kids in that district, no matter how they're being served. And so that's part of the issue that we have. So I think it's important to understand that. The quick question is, what's the financial implications of this if on the district, on, say, oh, for example, Portland Public? Is there any?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
Obligations, no.
Okay.
So,
thank
anyway.
You.
Any other questions? Okay, with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3044 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3151. Okay, Kristen Miles, David Williams, Gary Temple. Two and two. Okay, if you could. Yes, Richard, if you could read what the issue is, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3151 requires transfer of a sponsorship for a virtual public charter school to the State Board of Education if the average daily membership of the virtual public charter school exceeds the difference between the average daily membership of the school district that is the sponsor of the school and the average daily membership of the virtual public charter school.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. David Williams, representing Portland Public Schools, which you have before you is a very modest technical change to Oregon statute. Sorry. We actually didn't think last one would take nearly as long, so this is great. This one we do think is a pretty robust policy conversation, so we're really excited to have it with you. So a couple of things. As our policy approach to the bill before you, we think that in Oregon, as we survey the landscape of virtual education in Oregon, in the context of charter schools, we think there really are two fundamentally distinct types of entities operating virtual charter schools in the state. One type is more of a local or regional approach. I think you'll hear from Tim Drilling from Gresham Barlow, who's operating one of these types of operations. Another is really a statewide charter school, a statewide virtual charter school. There are several of these in the state that operate very large systems. Their reach is statewide. Their reach is not local, not even regional. It is a statewide approach. And we think that creates a fundamental difference in how we operate oversight and accountability in the state of these schools. And therefore, you have a bill before you that we think changes that accountability and oversight. And that really is the goal here, is about oversight and accountability of some very large virtual charter school operations in the state. We, of course, would transfer that function to the state. We think right now you have a system that creates an unfair or unequal relationship between very large operators and very small school districts that either simply won't have the capacity to provide effective oversight, or if they do provide effective oversight, it has a tendency to so overwhelm the operation of that school district as to do damage and harm to the district itself. The other piece I would add, and I'm going to ask our director of charter schools some of the specifics of the bill. Some people say, well, why is this an issue for Portland? Why should I care? Well, first of all, let me say we've sponsored 9 charter schools in Portland Public Schools. There are 2 state-sponsored charter schools in our district as well for 11 charter schools. We have over 4% of our student population attending bricks-and-mortar charter schools in Portland Public Schools. We run oversight. We provide strong and effective oversight of the charter schools in our district, and we think that creates for really strong charter school operations in Portland Public Schools that serve our kids well. We have, inside of our boundaries, about 400 kids now attending these statewide online virtual charter schools, and we think it's important that those kids, who are represented just as much by my elected school board and by the taxpayers of the city of Portland as by everybody else, all the other kids in my district, we think that they deserve that same kind of strong accountability and oversight. And it's to our interest to make sure that that's applied, hence the before you today.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Kristen Miles, and I'm the director of the charter school program at Portland Public Schools. I'd like to talk a little bit about the process that's described in the bill and what would trigger it. So based on a district's ADM collection, in any year that a virtual school's enrollment in that district would exceed the enrollment of the sponsoring school district, minus the enrollment of the virtual school, the sponsorship of the virtual school would then transfer to the State Board of Education. In other words, if a virtual school became bigger than its sponsoring district, the state would become the sponsor. So the process would go like this. First, at the end of the school year in which the charter school exceeded the size of its sponsoring district, the local sponsorship of the virtual school would be ended. Then the sponsorship would be transferred to the State Board of Education. The charter and the state board would then enter into negotiations for a new charter. The bill also clarifies that to the extent possible, the new charter with the state would be a continuation of the existing local charter. And the state would henceforth be then the sponsor of the virtual school and would assume all oversight responsibilities.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Gary.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Gary Temple, Superintendent of Scioto School District, current sponsor of Lourdes and Orca. The question before you today is, at what point does an online charter school become so big that it is really a state charter school and not a local charter school? And as I work on problems on my district, I kind of divide them into two categories. Those problems I can fix today, and those problems that I can fix when I have an opportunity. And because there is a planned break in sponsorship, you have an opportunity. For charter schools that would be close to the cutoff in this situation, they would have the opportunity to put a cap on themselves. And I would tell you that over the course of a school year, what we see is about 25% of the students withdraw from the school, and over the course of a summer, more than 25% withdraw from the school. And so even charter schools that were close to this cap would have the opportunity to take some corrective action if they wanted to stay in their local school district. But I would tell you that on a good day, SIO is about 700 kids sopping wet. And when we began, our goal was to recover, our hope was to recover 30 students from our homeschool population. That was our goal. And that maybe we would serve a few students from around the area. And they came to us and asked for a budget of 100, and we laughed. They opened with 500. And I would tell you that they've been online or on track every projection of where they think their growth will be since then. But that is equivalent of me telling you that I am going to be the superintendent of Scioto School District and Jefferson School District. And many of you would say, that's going to be a lot of work, but it's probably doable if you're willing to put in the nights and weekends. Since that time, they have grown. And the original plan was that they didn't want to be a huge corporate online school. They wanted to stay medium in size, and so their goal was to be about 2,500 students. And then it was 3,000. Now they're projecting that they will be at 6,000 in the near future. They are currently bigger than Klamath City Schools, bigger than Park Rose, and approaching the size of Silverton. Last year, Orca touched 165 districts. And as you know, we take our responsibility of oversight seriously. But at some point, we may not be able to keep up with that kind of workload. Over the years, several of you, of our educational partners, have had discussions about what would be the appropriate way to structure online schools that are serving a huge state population. And one of the goals has always been this blended model of keeping schools small and having them local to their communities. And so I would ask, if this committee is going to work this bill, that one of the things you consider is having a threshold of where you would start considering this. So, for example, if you're under 500, we're thinking that you're serving the local communities from where you come from. Having one online charter in the state is not new in the nation. There are other states that have such a program. But one of the things that would provide is a common set of oversight guidelines. And so for all charter schools that fit into that category, they would play by the same rules. Well, I think that's all I have.
Okay, fine. Do we have any questions for the panel? Representative Beretta.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, in the business world, that would be considered successful, you know, that kind of growth. But I noticed in the bill that it didn't, there really wasn't any basis for decisions made on performance. And so you have to, I mean, I have to say why the phenomenal growth of this school, was it because of the product they had and what they did? And then what kind of performance are they putting out, you know, in order to be measured by?
Would like to handle that.
Chair Doherty, Representative Barreto, I won't speak to the product that any specific online charter school is pointing out, putting out. I would direct Bill's attention to we do create district report cards and school report cards on the ODE website, and we can certainly get those for the large operators. As a district, I know to have a note of caution about some of those school report cards without digging into the demographics of students that people serve and et cetera. Again, for us, though, this isn't necessarily about the performance. If there is something wildly successful that is going on at Oregon Connections Academy that's reaching kids, then more power to them. We think that's great. But we think that a 3,000 or 4,000 kid school ought to probably not be sponsored and oversight and held accountable to a district of 100, 150, 200 kids, et cetera. We think that is essentially a statewide charter school and should function as a statewide charter school sponsored by the State Board of Education.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. ORS 329.842 is the creation of the Oregon Virtual School District Fund. We have an Oregon school district, virtual school district, that's set up to do just this. Now, I say this with some, I don't know, I told you so kind of approach. This is exactly what we were talking about in the State Board of Education when we began to look at the virtual school system. And I made it clear that this is where I thought we should be going. We should have a virtual school district that is able to, in fact, analyze how well different programs, different vendors are able to deal with things and have it available to all students in the state. And at this particular point, this is I see where this is going. It seems very appropriate. This is the kind of thing that people were talking about several years ago. 2007, as I recall, is when I got on the State Board of Education and we started to, I was talking about it right then. So this is not a surprise to me. It's a concern, and I think we need to begin to look at it. I'd like to know what Baker City is doing that is incredibly effective. I'd also like to know what they're doing at Oregon Connections Academy that's effective. But I'd also like to know what they're doing that is dropping kids from that program every spring and every summer. So we need to be able to have some way of really detailing this. And as much as I enjoy SIO, it's not exactly your metropolitan, you don't have area, and you don't have necessarily a lot of folks to do the research. But this is the kind of thing that I think we really need to be working on. So I appreciate this.
Okay, thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's be careful talking about SIO. Yeah.
I like SIO. I like SIO.
Be careful.
You gave me a great tour of SIO. I think
Mama,
it lasted about, what,
Mama
5 minutes?
Loves her SIO.
Went around twice.
Just because I can knock doors in an hour in SIO. And I only have to go to the coffee shop. Moving on and refocusing, as I look at the bill, it talks about the language of establishing the size, and then it talks about terminating, not transferring. Big difference, terminating the charter. So the agreement between Charter School A and the school district, that charter's terminated. So, and then it says the sponsorship should be transferred to the State Board of Education. It mentions virtual public, well, it transferred to the State Board. And then certainly based on this language, the charter school begins negotiating, and I've been a part of that on the school board end, starts negotiating a whole new contract. That can take a really, really long time. And that is, if I may be blunt, oftentimes an unpleasant experience.
I see this as could be the kiss of death to a school district, a virtual school district, because it terminates. It does not transfer. Big difference.
Yeah. Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, it's a good point. And certainly when we saw the word terminate in the draft as it came back from Legislative Council, that was a concern of ours. To the degree that the logistics of making this happen, that's the only legal mechanism to make it happen is that termination and then transfer of the charter. If there is a smoother way to make it happen legally within the parameters of transferring a charter and a contract, then we certainly open to that conversation, absolutely, because the intent here is simply a transference of the charter, not a, okay, you got to come and bring your whole proposal and start from scratch kind of thing. That's certainly not the intent. But there's a bit of a confine there.
And so we want to make sure we keep this moving.
Point of clarification. People. Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You, sir. Ma'am.
It's not a transfer. I want to be careful. Unless I'm missing something, I want to be very careful. We don't use that word. It's a termination and negotiating a new contract, new charter, unless I've misunderstood something. And I just want to be very clear with the verbiage we use. That might be your intent. I appreciate that intent. That's not what the bill says.
Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, that is our intent. So, again, to the degree that we can try to clean that up, let's make that happen. Again, I think there are some specific confines when you're transferring a contract with a local government up to a contract with a state government that we have to work within those parameters to make that happen. And we can continue to work on that language to make sure folks are much more comfortable. A couple of pieces of information to add to that. There's both the charter and the contract, and those are two sort of separate legal pieces to operating. We can certainly look into how the overlay, so you all changed statute, I believe, last session, so that while your charter is, has been renewed, you continue to operate while you're negotiating a contract, even though you may have a lapse in a legally binding contract, you sort of carry forward until such time as you get one. And the degree that we can align that and make that better, we'll certainly work on that language some more to make it more comfortable for you for that specific purpose. Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions to this panel? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. My question would be to Mr. Temple.
Read that.
You still have the ORCA contract, and you have run that for several years out of SIO with large numbers in comparison to what your school district has. Could you tell us a little bit about your successes, failures? Have numbers dropped? Have you not been able to meet the needs of students? So is that what's driving this conversation, that we've had issues that we're not aware of?
So, Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, part of this conversation is about the work that has been done in the past. So the work that the state board has done, the work that the online task force have done, the conversations of the education entities around the state who, have discussed how these things work. I would tell you that my board has had a concern for a couple of years about our capacity to do appropriate oversight. We no longer count, back when I was a high school principal, I had 50 kids in a grade level. I could count to 50 pretty quick, and I could go through 50 records pretty quick. We're talking about going through 4,500 records, not 500 records. And so I would tell you that the workload has increased immensely, to the point where I now have to depend mostly on my principals to run their buildings because of the work that I need to do to provide oversight.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you regret taking that on, that it was not a successful thing because of the numbers?
No, I'm not. I would tell you that online education definitely has a place in the state of Oregon, mm-hmm. definitely has a place with kids. The question is, at what point do we exceed the capacity of a small school district or any school district to provide the appropriate oversight for an online school?
Quickly, please.
Okay. I guess I'm just trying to wrap my head around how the problem occurred. So, and I don't think I'm getting quite an answer. So you've been doing this for several years, mm-hmm. and now, so was it not successful for several years, or did it just all of a sudden become an issue? I don't.
So I guess I'm, Representative Doherty, Representative Hack, I'm not sure I'm understanding the question. I don't think what we're saying is that online education has imploded and you need to fix this problem today. What we're saying is, at what point does an online charter school that represents 4,500 kids from around the state in 165 districts, at what point should that ought to be sponsored by the state and not by a district? That's really the only question.
Okay, and I just had one more, and I'm done.
Okay, because the other people will not get their chance to speak.
The Portland Public Schools, you have an online school. How many students do you have in yours, and has it increased over time? Or what are your numbers, and has it increased over time?
Chair Daugherty and Representative Hack, we do not have an online school in the district. We have a program called Virtual Scholars that that serves kids that are overage and undercredited or credit deficient, but we do not have an online school in PBS.
It's not a charter school.
No, it is not a charter school. It's a program within the district.
Okay.
Very quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What school districts in Oregon would be able to handle this under this criteria that the district has to be bigger than the virtual charter?
Chair Doty, Representative Bredo, it would obviously float depending on the size of the charter school, because it is once you exceed the actual enrollment of the school district. So I guess the cap would be, we are a 48,000 kid school district, so in theory we would have the ability to sponsor an online charter school that had enrollment up to 48,000 kids. I don't think we see that happening anytime soon, and certainly nobody has presented us with a charter school application to operate as a virtual charter school in the state either. But it would depend on the district that is sponsoring and how big the charter school is. It'll go up and down.
But you would qualify as a sponsor for this?
Sure. If, for instance, the largest ORCA is 3,500, 4,000 kids, you can simply go down the list. I would tell you more than half of the school districts in the state of Oregon have less than 1,000 kids each. So you're probably talking about 25% of the districts that would be able to sponsor a 3,500 to 4,000 kid charter school.
Thank you. So really what that sounds like is that rural districts will really be hampered by this. There'll be a ton of opportunity for larger districts, and smaller districts are just, the opportunity for them is absolutely gone.
Mm-hmm. Chair Doty, Representative Hack, I guess we just don't see it that way. We see it about oversight of the kids and the ability of any individual district to manage that capacity. I think what we've seen in this state is where accountability and oversight has been applied to these institutions, we see I hate to use some loaded language, but a little bit of a race to the bottom as these people begin to venue shop and find a different place to sponsor their charter school. I don't want to say it's one with less oversight or less interest in oversight, but it certainly creates an unfair relationship for that to happen. Again, none of them have come to us for sponsorship. That's the way this is going. I don't think this is about less opportunity for kids. If these are good programs that are offering opportunities, they ought to continue, and the state should sponsor them, provide the oversight, and provide the opportunities for kids all over the state. We don't have a problem with that.
Okay, one person we forgot to bring up, I didn't realize he was on the list, is Tim Drilling from Gresham Barlow. So, Tim, if you want to come up and finish, and then on deck we have Rich Moore and Marshall Koba, and then Jeff Krupp and Darlene Musin.
So, can I speak while he's
Thank
coming?
You, Chair Doherty.
Yes, while he's coming up, Representative Springer has one thing.
So
this is for Dave.
Richard, our fine committee administrator did some research for us real quick, and it says LC, Legislative Council, would not go for transfer, the word transfer, but insisted on terminate. So let's just know as we move forward that we have a closed door as far as where that conversation goes.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification, both of you.
Okay. Chair Doherty, members of the committee. I was asked to come today.
If you could identify yourself.
I'm Tim Drilling from the Gresham Barlow School District. Excuse me. I was asked to come to share my perspective as someone who has been a teacher and an administrator in this state, and someone who opened an online charter school, and who learned a great deal about what it takes to be successful operating an online school, what we think an online school ought to offer to students. So, if I could do that just briefly, based on my experience, I would not take any more time than
briefly summarize. Sure.
Right. In 2008, I was asked to develop a pilot by the Gresham Barlow School Board come up with a plan to open an online school. We've got students who need another pathway to a regular diploma. And their thinking came in part from two groups the district had had operating, a district visioning committee with local government officials and district members, and also a district graduation task force. And a common recommendation from those groups was, we need more options for our kids. We need more pathways. We're graduating 70% of our kids. We opened the academy in 2009. We thought we knew what we had to have in place in an online school to be successful. We thought that student-teacher contact was important, but we couldn't do it very well in the small space we had, in the small staff that we had. It was done essentially on an electronic basis. We wanted opportunities for individual tutoring, but again, we were limited in our ability to deliver that service to kids. We wanted socialization opportunities for kids, but that happened, again, primarily online. We wanted to connect kids to post-secondary opportunities, and we did that to some extent, but we just didn't have the resources to manage that effectively at the site. We have changed our model at the Gresham Barlow Webb Academy. We're no longer an online school. We're a hybrid school. And I appreciate what Representative Frederick said. Sometimes it's called blended, but it's hybrid. What we learned was you can't take the teacher out of learning. You cannot take the teacher out of the learning experience. And we have now teachers on site all day, every day. We have open labs for kids. We have content-specific labs for kids. And we work very hard to bring kids into the school site to work with teachers face-to-face. We have three full-time counselors. We have a full-time special education teacher on site. I don't know how in the world, with 13 years teaching experience, 25 years as an administrator, having run a high school for 5 years, I would have no way of knowing how to operate a school system statewide, service the needs of an IEP for students who are special education, deliver services to ELL students. I have no way of knowing how I could do that out of a very focused area. We capped our program at 500 students. That's a contractual cap. The school board in Gresham never wanted it to be anything larger than that. It's not going to be regional. It certainly isn't going to be statewide. Based on my experience, and I was the principal of that school for 2 years, I don't know how you can operate a system statewide and deliver services that kids need to be successful.
Okay, I'm going to have you wrap up. So if you
that's really
summarize.
What I came to say. Schools are neighborhood anchors. They're not profit centers. And the Gresham Barlow School Board really believes a local response to a local issue is the best way for a district to be able to operate.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the next thing we have up, Rich Moore and Marshall Koba. Thank you, Mr. Delay. I'm sorry, I forgot you. Okay, go ahead and start.
Okay.
No pauses. We're going to start right on.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Virtual Academy. ORVA is a virtual public charter school with 1,800 students in grades K through 12 in the North Bend School District. I'm here in opposition to House Bill 3151. It's interesting that we agree with the proponents of the bill that students in charter schools deserve and benefit from effective oversight and accountability. However, we think the bill is totally unnecessary, and that the current system is working well. House Bill 3151 is not the means to effective oversight and accountability. And as I understand currently today, the bill would not affect us as we currently sit. I believe the North Bend School District has about 2,300 students. We have about 1,800, so there's a little room for growth. But we see the future, and we're very concerned about it. And looking back, in 2009, Senate Bill 767 implemented the most stringent standards in any charter school in the country on Oregon's virtual schools. Oregon's virtual public charter schools are held to a higher standard than any other charter school in the country, and much more than traditional brick-and-mortar schools in the state. We have additional reporting requirements and additional standards that must be met on an ongoing basis. We believe we have very effective oversight and accountability now. We would worry about this changing, possibly in a negative light, if we are immediately terminated and moved to the State Board of Education. Our relationships that exist today are very strong. We have a good relationship with the North Bend School Board and have worked hard to earn and maintain this relationship. We are a good partner with the school district and are wanted in the community as our charter was recently renewed. We are not so certain that the State Board of Education would be so welcoming, nor has the interest or wherewithal to operate a virtual public school as dynamic as ours. House Bill 3151 would have additional expense for the State Board and could have a significant impact on the positive relationships we have with our students and staff. We believe growth is good. Parents and students want options, Growth of a virtual public charter school shows that the curriculum and offerings are working for the families that choose to make it their educational option at that point in their educational career. We think it is odd that the largest school district in Oregon is looking to impose their will on small districts that have been willing to innovate and attempt to fill a need for students that are seeking this option. We look forward to working with Portland Public Schools to offer our innovative curriculum and programs that have proven highly successful in other urban districts throughout the country. And I believe if we go back in history, and I'm almost certain of this, we did reach out to the Portland Public Schools when K-12 was initially in Oregon. Section 5A says that at any time that during the school year a virtual public charter school becomes larger than the host school district, the charter is terminated, and the sponsorship shall be transferred to the State Board of Education. Done. Bang. Done. No discussion. No opportunity for extenuating circumstances. No waiver process. Just a raw number, and the sponsorship is moved to the State Board. Keep in mind that this charter would be moved from a school district that has nurtured and worked with the Virtual Public School Charter Board and has worked to make it an appealing and effective charter school. Maybe they have been through one or two charter reauthorizations, as we have, and have worked out issues that may have arisen. Maybe the community has gone through a significant economic downturn, and the school has lost a number of students through no fault of the charter school. Maybe the growth in the charter school has been the result of a highly effective curriculum and management and teaching structure that has enlightened and engaged the students and parents and have created the opportunity that they have been searching for in a public school setting. Maybe the charter school works and works well. And now, through House Bill 3151, we're looking to penalize all that is good with the school through this arbitrary measure. I believe one could look at the small school districts in Oregon, much like Washington, D.C., looks to the states as incubators of change and as opportunities for new and innovative thought and action and implementation of the governmental services that we all rely on. In regards to online learning, we can look at the small districts as innovators of change in Oregon's educational landscape. We should appreciate and acknowledge and applaud the leadership they have shown in the arena of virtual public charter schools. If we go back 10 years, they didn't exist. But because of small school districts, they do exist and have been successful and have offered a great option for thousands of students. The history of virtual public charter schools is being written as we sit here today. The innovation and change in Oregon has in large part been accelerated by the small school districts who saw the need, took the risk to affiliate with charter boards and with online curriculum that would offer another valuable option for Oregon students. This leadership and innovation should be applauded, not terminated. We see no need for the immediacy and finality of the termination language in 3151. If we want to move towards another layer of reporting and stringent standards, we've got plenty in Senate Bill 767, then Oregon should possibly consider what some other states require when virtual charter schools are being authorized or reauthorized.
Yeah, and you need to have your summarized.
At that point, the State Board of Education has a process to certify that the charter school meets the requirements to proceed. This upfront certification sets the standard that is then implemented through the charter board and the authorizing school district board. It is not a looming threat, as would be implemented in House Bill 3151, that will stifle success and growth. We think the bill is a bad idea with the potential for significant unintended consequences. We urge your opposition. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Moore.
Oops. Chairperson Daugherty and members of the committee, I want to first thank you for this opportunity to present at this hearing, but also to thank you for your service to education in Oregon, because in my 40 years, this is my first opportunity. I'd rather be coaching at the state basketball tournament than doing this, but I am here. My name is Rich Moore. I'm the board chair for the San Diego Canyon School District. I have over 40 years of experience in education, serving as a counselor, teacher, and coach. I have worked with many students over the years and have seen what makes successful educational programs. I was elected as a board member in the summer of 2013, and so in my 40 years, and this has been the most difficult year and a half, and Representative Springer, Representative Hack are both familiar with our situation. Last school year, we were given the opportunity, along with other area school districts, to submit a proposal for sponsoring Oregon Connections Academy, the state's largest online charter school. Our board members reviewed the request for proposal and quickly came to the conclusion that this was a good partnership for the students of our school district as well as ORCA. This sponsorship process took nearly 9 months from proposal writing to contract signing. We took this process seriously and gave it the utmost consideration. One of our board members had a student in ORCA, and our current superintendent, Todd Miller, is a former school director for ORCA, and he was able to inform us of the challenges and benefits of sponsoring an online charter school. His experience and understanding of ORCA made this a great fit for us. Prior to our sponsorship of ORCA, we underwent an intensive community-based strategic planning process to help us guide our future, set priorities, and establish core values. One of our core values became partnerships. We realized that as a rural school district, we needed to add partners to increase student opportunities. Partnering with a top-notch online school will help move our district forward in new technologies and new professional development for our staff. This partnership, coupled with the recent work with Upward Bound, an organization supporting individuals with disabilities, added valuable organizations into our community and student opportunities. We are excited to be the sponsor of Oregon Connections Academy to support learning for students of the San Yam Canyon and students who choose ORCA as their educational option. We are prepared to fulfill our oversight responsibility and work with ORCA to improve academic achievement. Our goal is student success, and our contract binds it. We look forward to building this relationship and completing our 5-year charter contract. Rural school districts already have a difficult time providing opportunities, and this bill would make it even harder for smaller school districts to add successful programs. We have put lots of resources into this partnership, and we're excited about the possibilities moving forward.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank
I'm going to have the other two people speak, and then we'll ask questions of everyone. So if you guys can kind of rotate. And that's Jeff Krupp and Darla Musin, please. Darla Musin. Thank you. And then we'll open up to questions for all four. You could identify yourself
so, first.
The record.
Okay.
You go ahead. I'm a rookie at this, so you go ahead.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm former State Representative Jeff Krupp, founder, one of the founders of Oregon Connections Academy, and current president of the school board there. We oppose, the board does, this bill for a number of reasons. As a nonprofit organization, we work very hard at meeting the needs of our students. And our director, Farthing, articulated that we have quite a challenge. It was well over 60% of our students come to us credit deficient. And when you have as higher turnover as is standard in this business, that is an enormous challenge to meet. And we take oversight of that very, very seriously. The oversight regimen that we have currently today with SIO is very rigorous, to the point that it is, I know, I'm sorry. It's always the problem I've had. My apologies for that. It is such a rigorous regimen of oversight that we just recently had to hire a half-time person to put up with an unprecedented amount of information requests from the SIO school district in that role. And it has worked very well. In fact, SIO was really adamant, Superintendent Temple, about bringing in an outside organization to look at our operations and how we did things. And so every year, Portland State University sends a team down of retired educators and people involved in that process, and they do a very vigorous review of who we are. The oversight is working. It's working very, very well. And I have to say that as we move to a new sponsor with San Yam Canyon, that oversight will continue for a number of reasons. First of all, the amount of funding that the sponsor receives is very equal to what SIO is currently receiving in terms of their oversight role today. So the funding will be there to adequately ensure that Sandy M. Canyon can engage in appropriate oversight. And that's a contractual obligation that we have in our contract with them. We spell that out. Not only do we agree in our contract to abide by the laws of the state of Oregon and federal laws and all of the auditing requirements, but we go a step further in terms of the review process. So we're going to have just as rigorous a review process as we do today. In fact, I would say it will be even better because our new relationship with Superintendent Miller, his inside knowledge of having been the executive director of Oregon Connections Academy, gives him a special insight into these incredible challenges that we face and how important it is to meet them. So I believe that we're going to be able to continue with an outstanding level and a very successful level of oversight that we have today. Our contract calls for continuation of all of this. I do want to say something also about the process of how we found a new sponsor. We decided that we were looking for a different type of relationship. And so what we decided we would do is put out a solicitation to school districts that were within 25 miles, and that includes a very large school district, the Albany School District, in addition to Lebanon and others. And we did that for a couple of reasons, primarily because we have board members and staff that live in and around the SIO and the Lebanon area, and we didn't want to be too far away from that. So we put out a solicitation process, and we received two proposals, one of them from SIO and one of them from Santee Am Canyon. We went through a very rigorous review process.
Summarize a little bit. Thank you.
That was overseen by our legal counsel. Finally, let me say something just briefly about, I'm astonished that the SIO School District, which was very comfortable in negotiations with us with our projected growth rates, that now all of a sudden they think that they can't handle that when they thought it was okay previously, and that the state should engage in that process. Frankly, I don't understand that, and I believe that they've done an outstanding job of oversight to where we are. And frankly, I don't see what the problem is here. So, Madam Chair, members of the community, that concludes our committee, rather.
Thank you. Ms. Musa.
This is my testimony.
Okay.
So, and we have about 5 minutes because we still have some other business to do and have questions.
Okay. My name is Darla Musin. I am the executive director for Savvy Island Academy. We are a K-8 public charter school sponsored by the Scappoose School District. We have 216 students. And when I saw House Bill 3151, it inspired me to come and speak to you today. I've not ever done this before, so bear with me. House Bill 3151 does not fix the problem. The problem, or the elephant in the room today, is that the ORS allows school districts to turn public charter schools into a source of revenue. If you truly want to fix the problem, give charter schools their 100%, give school districts their 100%. Any expense incurred by the sponsoring school district to, as you've heard, oversight or oversee or check on, the charter school could be invoiced by the school district. This would provide a clear record and a trail of services provided and revenues received. You could audit it. You could see how much does it cost to sponsor a school a charter with 35, 4,000, or 216. If no services are provided, then there's no profit being made by the sponsoring district. In talking about oversight, which I heard a lot today, I noticed, I went back and looked, I was paying attention, but I looked in the ORS, and the only thing I can find that talks to what the sponsor in law is responsible for, the sponsor or sponsor's designee at least annually shall visit the public charter school site and review the public charter school's compliance with the terms and provisions of the charter. That's it. That's all they have to do.
This is for bricks and mortar charters.
That's all I could find under the operations of charters.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. So if we really want to look at what is a solution, I think looking beyond this, no longer would charter schools be cash cows, like the situation you're hearing. ORCA, as they've referred to today several times, they're a K-12. K-8, 20% of their money goes to their sponsor, by law, could. 5% of 9 through 12 goes to them, by law, they could. It sounds like they've negotiated this, and what it sounds like, just in the research that I was able to do between yesterday and today, I was looking at how much ORCA, how many students they have. I was looking at what the ADMW is. If they negotiated 5%, let's say, K-12, 5% to the sponsoring district, that's $1.3 million. So you're telling me that for $1.3 million, SIO and CNTM can't hire people to supervise or look or check on? That's probably more money than they get in their own ADMW. So that is the cash cow that ORS has created by giving sponsoring districts the ability to receive funds with very little guidance on what those funds require of them to do. And then it creates a system where small school districts are going after these. Large school districts are upset because they're not getting access to this money. And it leaves the people that the heart of what you wrote charter schools for, the kids, is not even being considered. In fact, I looked at 338015, and it talks about why you started charter schools. And it was to increase learning, increase choice, better meet the needs, build stronger relationships, encourage different and innovative learning models, provide opportunities for learning that are flexible and innovative.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize, because we've got that in statute.
Yeah. So, but nowhere in here does it say use charter schools to become a source of revenue for sponsoring districts. And that is exactly what is happening. For our school, it's not at the magnitude of what you're talking about. It's $345,000. But that's huge for the 216 kids. What does that get for what do I get for $345,000?
No, you're not a virtual school though, are you?
No, I'm a brick and mortar.
Yeah.
I get an annual visit. That's what I get. No other resources. So I guess what I'm saying is, if truly you want to look at a solution, I don't think House Bill 3151 is the solution, but I think there may be some other House bills out there that could address this issue, where sponsoring districts are creating a line item in their budget based on sponsoring charter schools, virtual or brick and mortar.
Okay, thank you. The other four, if they just want to sit behind, we have about 2 minutes for questions. Representative Frederick.
This is a...
And if you need to direct them to the other two.
This is not a rhetorical question. If everything was going so well with SIO, why move? From what I understand, part of the decision was based on how much money was going to be, SIO was going to continue to give to ORCA versus what Santiam Canyon will be giving to ORCA. Am I incorrect on that?
Chair Doherty and Representative Frederick, actually you are.
Okay.
Okay. One of the biggest issues that we have had is special education, and the model that we're working under today is not a good one, and it is horribly inefficient, and it creates enormous issues for us. 13% of our population, of our student now, is special ed. Our new superintendent of Santiam Canyon, Todd Miller, that was his, when he taught in bricks and mortars, that was his specialty, special ed. So we needed to have not only a more efficient operation with special education, but frankly, we had had issues with SIO. And frankly, we just really felt that if we were going to move to the next level,
even if we didn't grow, we needed a better partner, someone who really understood what the challenges of our school are as a virtual online.
Okay.
And that is it more than anything else.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, any other questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much for here. With that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3151 and open up a work session on House Bill 2928.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2928 establishes the task force on class sizes to determine the appropriate class sizes of students, identify methods to reduce class sizes, and determine costs for methods to reduce class sizes, declares an emergency effective on passage. It comes with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, and the committee's been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments that I would have led the LAC committee staff the task force.
And so the only amendment is that the committee person would be on the Dash Force. Thank you.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2928, dated February 20th, 2015.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2928, dated February 20th, 2015. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, with that, the Dash 1 amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2928 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2928 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation that it be referred to the Joint Ways and Means Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
How long is that amendment? Can we read it? I'm sorry, I'm way behind.
I just looked at it. I can pull it up here really quick. And I can read it. It's so small.
Yes.
If that's okay with you, Madam Chair.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
I just shut my computer.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Let me find it here.
Oh, here we go.
The whole amendment. On page 2 of the printed bill on line 25, delete Department of Education and insert legislative administrative committee. In line 30, delete Department of Education and insert the legislative committee, which was who's staffing.
Yes.
Thank you. I may be slow, but I just want to be thorough.
It's okay. I'm glad you're thorough.
Could have had the words Richard in there.
Okay.
Okay, even though we did pass that, that is the amendment. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Barreto?
No.
Representative Hack?
No.
Representative McLean?
Yes.
Representative Peluso?
Yes.
Representative Reardon?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Oh, excused.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Okay. Vice Chair Springer?
Yes.
Chair Doherty?
Yes. Okay, with that, motion is approved. Okay, and I think that is the close work session on House Bill 2928. And we are going to carry over House Bill 2608. Okay? With that, we're adjourned. Have a good week. With that, we're adjourned. Have a good week. Okay?